Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Herbie, let's go!
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Previously on the Lawrence Holmes Show.
What's changed with Carlos Rodon? Is it really just about him being healthy, or is there a different pitcher now?
Well, first of all, Lawrence, if you think he's been pretty good, he's been real good. He's been historically good. He's been otherworldly good. He's been a guy that when you go out there, there's a certain team confidence. When you have a guy who is an ace or he's throwing like an ace, there's a certain team confidence that comes about that the opposition knows it's going to be a tough night for them, and his own team knows it's going to be a real good night for us, because if we can score three or four, we're going to win this game. That's what Carlos has been. What's changed is Carlos. It's not entirely his health, because that's good, but his health coupled with his old mechanics wouldn't be the guy we're looking at now. He's got supreme confidence that his new mechanics will allow him to repeat his motion on a pitch-by-pitch basis. It's the same kind of confidence over the last two starts that Dylan Cease has had. He also now has a repeatable motion. He also now can throw his curveball for a strike. He's got a new aiming point. I'm talking about Cease. As far as Carlos is concerned, he's a new pitcher.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
Bass drop! Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. We have a lot to discuss today. We got two baseball teams that are doing pretty well. I mean, I know the Cubs lost yesterday, but overall, they've been playing better baseball over the last week or so. So we're going to talk about the Cubs today. The White Sox, man, I got really mad. I didn't get a chance to talk about this on the air, but it must have been Thursday night. I'm watching MLB Network. That's usually what I do before I go to bed. Like, I'll catch whatever the West Coast game is, and I'll watch a little bit of what's going on. And they had, what's the guy, TV Ronji, Amsinger?
Greg Amsinger,
who's basically Chris Ronji on television. They're talking. It was him. It was Dan Plesac and
Ron Darling, right?
Ron Darling, and it was Harold Reynolds. And they were like, oh, the pitching in the American League Central. I don't know if there's any staff that. And I was like, have you all not watched the White Sox at all? Because right now Lucas has got the highest ERA on the team in the rotation. That rotation with Cease's last couple of starts, the fifth starter threw a no-hitter, and he's been money. We talking about, what, 5.56 ERA on Carlos Rodon so far this year? And I'm just sitting there seething, because that's what we do as White Sox fans. Like, it's like, really? Like, even though you probably projected the White Sox to win the American League Central, you're not even paying attention to how good their starting rotation is? Really? At MLB Network, yeah, I'm calling you out, TV Ronji.
I got a tweet from one of those hosts there, Steven Nelson, who is a White Sox fan. It's like, I'm not a part of this.
I know, because, hey, he's actually going to be the guest on House of L this week. And he's like, I think he's the second most famous White Sox fan. I can make an argument that it's Steven Nelson. Like, if we're talking about actual White Sox fans, he's it. Yeah, I'm like, right before I go to bed, like, really?
And it compared him to a mid-major in basketball. Right?
This rotation is stacked. This rotation is so good that we don't need Michael Kopech in it. Yet. Like, the guy who's been the best reliever in baseball, we don't need to rush him into the rotation because the rotation's so dominant. Go look at the last two times around. Even the game that they lost, the one that we got mad at, remember? Dylan Cease was out there throwing peas. So, yes, we're going to talk about how good the White Sox rotation has been, how good the White Sox have been overall. They've won 13 out of their last 18 games. And we'll talk about what's going on with the Cubs. There's some other stuff that I want to get into today. Joe Cowley is going to join me because I want to talk about the Bulls. I got a legitimate question for him about progress and building blocks for the Bulls. We will discuss that with him next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Hayes with a bad pass on the lob. Set up, climbing the ladder. It's Zach LaVine with a two-handed slam. LaVine throwing it down on a two-handed dunk.
It might be too little, too late. Bulls need a whole lot of help if they're going to get themselves into a play-in scenario. But there's been some good that's been going on in the games since Zach got hurt and the games that Zach's been back. I want to talk with Joe Cowley about that because he covers the Bulls on an everyday basis and does a wonderful job of it for the Sun-Times. Also, if we're in some sort of apocalyptic situation, he is our Negan. He is the person that we will follow. You get fed with what he kills. All you bloggers out there, all you people on Twitter like to come after Joe? Sitting in your basement? I don't know. You probably are just sitting in a regular room. But you eat what he kills, damn it. And now he joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park. If you don't want to make the trip, you can just go to apford.com and check it out there. And now Joe Cowley joins me here on The Score. What's up, sir?
Ladies, hello. How you doing? You know, I was blogging SOPs, probably make more money than me doing it. You know, I just have to put this whole image in my head to make me function from day to day.
I mean, look, if it allows you to be the underdog in any way, I am here to support that very much. I wanted to ask you about Coby White, and I know that you wrote something in the Sun-Times over the last couple of days about Coby White. I feel like we've seen an actual maturation, and as weird as this is going to sound, the best thing to happen to Coby White was Zach not being there for a few games so that he could create chemistry with Vooch.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a key. You know, we're talking about the big three. I just wrote about that today, the big three. And Zach's his own. Zach can come and go and get his own shot whenever he wants, shoot from anywhere, wherever he wants. Coby needed a piece, and Vooch has been that kind of piece because he's such a good passer and because he's so good at identifying the most open man on the court. And because Coby actually has a skill set of catch and shoot, and he's been doing that at a high level lately, you know, it's a tough matchup. And Billy Donovan talked about it yesterday that they're, you know, purposely making sure Kobe's either top of the key or ball side when they go into the post, when he puts the ball in the post, so that you put that defender in conflict. Now that defender has to make a choice. Do I double down and help against Vooch, who can put a lot of guys on an island? Or do I stay out on the guy who's hot and catch and shoot? And that's what the NBA is about, is it's mismatch and finding guys that are in conflict and put him in that world where they have to make tough decisions. And, you know, to Kobe's credit, he's been knocking him down, and it's been a nice mix. And, you know, I think what we've identified Kobe as and what we've been able to see is, yeah, he's not a starting NBA point guard. And that's fine. But he is an important piece moving forward because of his ability to get hot and score at a high clip like he does. You know, that has value in the NBA coming off the bench and being that sixth guy, being a young Lou Williams or a poor man's Lou Williams, however you want to describe it. That's kind of what he reminds me of. You know, he can distribute. He can play that point guard, can't handle that point guard duties. But what his scoring and how he can do it is the value.
And he's been in there in closing time. Like, he's been the point guard in games at the end of the games, and that might be more valuable than being the guy who's on the floor when they start. I wonder a lot about, even though Vooch is, you know, he's clearly a skilled offensive big, if just working with a veteran big instead of the bigs that Kobe White was working with, whereas young guys trying to figure things out versus a guy that's seen a lot and can understand, hey, we can play this two-man game for a while. You and I can play this two-man game. And it seems like he just got comfortable over the last 15 games, and I'm glad to see it.
Yeah, well, you made a huge point right there. Wendell Carter did not know what he was yet. You know what I mean? Daniel Gafford, when he played for Wendell, when Wendell would get hurt, did not really know what he was yet. They're trying to make up what they are and learn what they are in the NBA. And then the point guard has to play off guys who are in that flux of indecision. I mean, that's asking a lot, especially for a point guard who doesn't know what he was and has never been really familiar with being an everyday point guard at the NBA level. So to have a guy who knows exactly what he is, comfortable in his skin, has a skill set that he can bring out there every day, and for you to just have to adjust to him because you know what you're getting with him, has made life easy for Kobe. And I'll make this other point too. Kobe's defense, which was atrocious at times in the first half of the season and even into the benching, especially where he seemed a little bit mopey with losing that starting job, even though he told us different. There were times he kind of looked like he checked out defensively. His defense the last month has been much better from an effort standpoint and from a physicality standpoint. Instead of ducking under a screen or going around, if he's seen what Troy Brown Jr. was doing before he got hurt, what Javonte Green is doing, and just go through a guy. Let him know you're there. If he wants to set this pick the next time you're coming through town, it's gonna hurt, and there's going to be some impact from it. And so to see the way he's fighting through picks and fighting through screens, and understanding that you always don't have to be the nail, sometimes you can be the hammer. I think that's also settled in, and we're seeing that with the scoring, the opposition scoring they've allowed the last three games.
Joe Cali of the Sun-Times joining me here on The Score as we talk about the Bulls. We see Kobe White, and it's a second-year player. With Patrick Williams, how would you assess how he's come along, and what are the Bulls going to have him focus on at the end of the year?
Yeah, I mean, his trajectory has been a little disappointing, I'm not going to lie. From what I saw from him in the first half, I was like, okay, I see the path this dude's on. We know whose favorite player is, Kawhi Leonard. We see some similarities from a young Kawhi in that mentality he has, even the way he kind of carries himself from a stoic, unemotional standpoint like Kawhi. He doesn't have the weird laugh that Kawhi does, but, you know, we'll let that pass. But And I think what's happened is they made that trade and he just decided to take a back seat and write it off as, I'm just playing the game the right way, where that's not the mentality they wanted from him. Yet there is greatness in understanding how to play the game and play it the right way as a young person, because I think a lot of guys coming to college don't. But at the same time, it's almost like he's using his ability or his excuse for being passive as playing the right way. That I haven't liked. And I think it's actually hurt him defensively. I thought I'd see him improve a little bit more defensively. And he still makes really good plays just because of a skill set he's born with to defend. But he needs to work on everything in this offseason. Most importantly, he needs to work on his confidence and his aggressiveness and understanding what he could be in this NBA by being more aggressive, by being a bit more selfish, and understanding that his impact is just as big as anyone else's impact. So to me, that's the biggest thing he could work on. Hopefully they do the Vegas thing in August like they're talking about, because he needs Vegas. He needs summer league. He needs a full summer of working with guys at the NBA level and improving a lot of things, but mostly kind of what's upstairs and his mentality as far as aggressiveness.
When it comes to Billy Donovan and the staff, have you been able to see where they are working towards making guys better? And I don't want to make this a whole thing about Jimbo. I just there have been people that have talked about what Mo Cheeks has done for Coby White, for example. Do you think that player development is in a better place because of the coaching staff that they have now?
I mean, it's not even close. You're talking about night and day. They hired six extra guys just for player development, not including the coaching staff. So guys are getting a chance. A lot of these guys have high basketball backgrounds, whether they were players or coaches or they're guys that are considered, you know, pretty smart, and players able to respect them quickly. So, you can't even compare the two as far as where the coaching staff is and where the development is compared to what it was. And that's not, and you brought up the name, that's not Jimbo's fault. That was the old front office's mentality of keeping everything small, keeping the family little, keeping the house tight and buttoned up. And they didn't want to have a big developmental group, and we saw the effects of that.
This offseason, what's realistic for them? Like, should I, as a Bulls fan, be thinking big, or do they even need big? Like, if they've now identified that Coby could be kind of the third piece to this, and you know that Tice is a rotational player, you know that Thad is a rotational player, guys that you're going to use. I know they need a point guard, like a pure point guard. Is there anything out there that they can that is realistic for a Bulls fan to think about going into the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, if they can land a veteran point guard at the right price, I mean, Mike Conley's name has been floated out there. I know that Woj floated Schroeder's name out there from the Lakers, and that would be an improvement. But again, I think they need a veteran point guard that has a defensive mentality like a Mike Conley, that is not a equal to Zach, but one that he feels is more of a big brother to continue that evolution of him as a leader. I mean, look, people have talked about his leadership skills getting better, and I think they probably have, but he needs that guy, that young type guy who's actually in the backcourt with him, playing at that level, that could kind of show him the importance of being an all-around player and defense and things like that. If they had a guy like a Conley, and obviously payroll, I mean, you'd have to say bye to Satoransky, you'd have to somehow, and you know, it's tough to move off that money because there's only 1 year left on that deal anyway. If they were going to move off of it, they would have got, you know, an expiring contract this season for Sato at the trade deadline. That didn't happen. Lowry's probably going to walk. And I think most Bulls fans will be fine with that. I think there's things to be excited about. But the biggest thing, the takeaway that Bulls fans should be the most excited about is the bat signal has been put up in the sky from Karnisovas. He showed at the trade deadline that they will swing big. And as long as you have that mentality, and Garrett Temple talked about it yesterday, players notice that. Players around the league notice that. So the fact that he is starting to put footholds in the mountain and say this is a destination place, yeah, that's what Bulls fans should be excited about, that there are no limits. There are no, oh, it's just going to be an offseason of survival like the old regime did. Anything could happen. Trading Zach could happen. Anything is capable because the focus is number one on winning. So to me, that's the biggest takeaway you take into the offseason, is anything is possible with this front office.
How disappointed are those people over there that Lowry didn't take advantage of the time that Zach was gone to kind of show that he is still like starter level player?
Yeah, I don't even know if it's that Zach was gone. I think they're disappointed that Lowry hasn't taken advantage of a lot of things long before Zach was gone. He didn't take advantage if they added a couple of Euros that he knew in Vooch and in Tice and could have had more comfort in that. He didn't take advantage of the fact that he was given a name to starter at the beginning of the season and did very little with that. He didn't take advantage of when he was moved to the bench and had a chance to lead that second unit. He didn't do that. Still disappeared. I think there's a lot of reasons to kind of just scratch your head and say this guy is – it's not a 7-foot-1 unicorn anymore. It's a 7-foot-1 enigma. And You know, maybe another team unlocks it. I think a change of scenario is something he needs. Look, he's 7 foot and shoots a three at a high clip. He's going to get paid, and he's going to get paid a lot because there's a bunch of teams that were set up for this 21 free agent class that had it pulled out from underneath the rug when a lot of these guys re-signed before this season even started. So you have a lot of money that's going to be spent, and it's going to have to be spent on lesser products, and that's where Lowry's going to benefit.
Well, how do you explain what's going on with the Knicks?
One word, Tibbs.
Yeah,
that's how you explain it. When you have a top five elite coach that knows how to bring the most out of you, and you have an organization that has searched desperately for an identity that they used to have in the 90s, toughness. I mean, you watch those games. I remember watching a game, the overtime game against Atlanta a couple of weeks ago. These dudes just play so hard. And the fact that Tibbs actually has to shut down the gym from these guys and tell them, look, you guys are practicing too much. If Tibbs is telling a team they're practicing too much, what does that tell you about the makeup of those guys? I mean, that's the kind of mentality that Celtics championship team that he was the assistant coach on had, where they had to send guys home and tell Garnett, look, end these extra practices you guys are doing. It's too much. It's too much. And twice now he's had to tell guys, I'm locking the doors to the facility. Don't come tomorrow. You won't be able to get in. Now, obviously, he was probably still there because he doesn't know anything different. But to have the makeup, to have his makeup and have guys that drink that Kool-Aid and then want more, I mean, that's a scary combination. And now, all of a sudden, the Knicks are in it place moving forward. They've got money. They've got draft picks. And they have an identity. So, if you're a Knicks fan, you have to be excited about what's going on just in this, this first season of Tibbs alone.
You covered baseball for a really long time, and we're talking with Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times. I want to throw something by you that is going to be a discussion point on the show later on today. Okay. I've been trying to figure out if a walk is a walk for everyone, or if you're a run producer, air quotes, a run producer, whether walks are valuable. I don't know if you've been paying any attention to what's going on with the White Sox. But yeah, right. This is Yasmani Grandal's slash line, okay? 113, 378, 242. He's got the most walks in Major League Baseball. Are walks different for him because the expectation is he's going to be hitting doubles and home runs?
I mean, look, it depends kind of what your philosophy is. You know, to me, and when I was covering baseball, obviously the big thing, you know, Moneyball was all the talk, and on base percentage and get on base any way possible. And if that means, you know, taking the bat out of a guy's hand and that's how he's earning his on base, who cares? Just get on base. So I understand what you're saying, but it almost goes back to the year, you know, Barry Bonds was doing what he was doing, and although he would see one good pitch a game, if that. And so was that good for him? Was that good for baseball to have him always on base? Well, I mean, the team was successful with him getting on base. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. I don't know if that answers your question, because the mentality that I came from when I was covering baseball is the takeover of on base and the importance of on base and get on base by any means necessary. If it's a guy that likes to hit over the plate in the box and he's getting hit by a lot of pitches, so be it. Doesn't matter. He's getting on base. So, I just think you kind of embrace those guys that know how to get on base because good things happen. You stretch the lineup, you put more intensity on the pitcher, you put more pressure on the pitcher. So, yeah, I don't care what the other numbers dictate or what he should be doing. If he's getting on base, to me, that's a good thing.
Joe, as always, I appreciate the time and the conversation. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
All right, buddy. Anytime. You know that.
That is Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times. He's great. And like I said, if there's a zombie apocalypse, that's the guy I'm going to go find. We're going to team up, chop some heads off. That's what we're going to do. I want to get into this a little bit more. I want to talk about Yasmani Grandal. And whether or not guys that are in the middles of lineups, whether it's okay for them to take walks, where he hits in the lineup is also a question. We will discuss that next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
A little big. There's a ball that's fair. And into the left field corner. Moncada will score easily. Grandal around third. Here he comes. Relay throw to the plate. Save. Ball got away from Perez. It's 5-1.
Salvi hangs on to that ball. Grandal would have been way out, but he didn't. And that's why what you do. You send guys and you try to put pressure on the defense in those situations. Highlight courtesy of NBC Sports Chicago. Lynn Casper on the call. It's a very different broadcast with him and Jason. Stoney will be back tomorrow night. But you're going to hear from Steve Stone in just a second on this conversation about Yasmani Grandal. My philosophy, so you know where I stand on this. I'm an on-base guy. I think that good things happen when guys get on base. I think that there is value at Farm and Fleet, but there's value in guys looking at more pitches, taking their walks. I'm a believer that walks lead to hits by a player. That if a player has gotten to the point where they're like, you know what? Instead of swinging at some of these pitches that are a little bit out of the strike zone, that I'm turning into weak contact, I'm going to instead take this walk. Granted that the umpires aren't bad, and there have been a lot of bad home plate umpiring this season in White Sox games and Cubs games, in every game in Major League Baseball. But I also understand the fan that looks at Yasmani Grandal and says, hold up. This guy is the biggest free agent contract in White Sox history. We ain't paying him to walk. You can't walk off of 35th and Shields. I mean, you can. I understand that frustration. Right now, he's second in Major League Baseball and first in the American League in walks with 27. Over the last five games, Yasmani Grandal has walked 14 times in the last five games. But his slash line is crazy. He's hitting 113. But he's got, isn't he right there with Madrigal as far as highest on-base percentage? His on-base percentage is 378. In other words, 38% of the time that he has a plate appearance, Yasmani Grandal is finding himself on base, which is terrific. Here's the number that's scary. Like, the 113 is bad. Slugging 242? Yo.
Right now, Lurie Garcia is slugging higher than Yasmani Grandal.
We know he's terrible at baseball. What's Billy Hamilton slugging? I think Billy's like below him. But 242 slugging? That makes Yasmani Grandal a 620 OPS player. League average is around 750, 760.
Billy Hamilton slugging. Let's see. It just switched on me. Damn it. 130.
Oh, God. Isn't that quit baseball low? Like, if you slug in 130, that's, you might need to walk away from the game.
His OPS plus, and remind you, he played a lot of games, started a lot of games, is negative two.
I'm sorry?
His OPS plus, which averages 100, he's negative two.
Oh, my God. What's Yasmani's? Because that's of interest to me. On what his OPS plus is.
It's 83.
Huh. Did you do that on purpose?
I did not.
Okay, so he's a below average hitter according to that statistic. And clearly, like, even if you went old school where you're like, a guy's hitting 113, but he's getting on base. So is a walk a walk a walk? Does it matter? Does it matter what you're getting paid? Does it matter what you're supposed to be in a lineup? Is there a bigger question here? Is there a bigger question about, is Yasmani a good hitter anymore? Has he lost pop in his bat? Someone texted in that his BABIP is way low. I think it's 125, something like that. That's, you would expect that to rebound. Should a player who is not feeling it from a hitting standpoint adjust because of who they are, or should they just say, if they're going to give me these walks, I'm going to take them?
Truth be told, that Yasmani has never been an average guy. So his career average, I think, is 238.
That's fine, but it's not 113. The other question is, because of Grandal being slow, is his walk as good to you as Tim Anderson's walk? Or even though he's a crappy base runner, Nick Madrigal's walk? That guy doesn't, I mean, he likes to hit, though. He hits his way on base. There's a lot to that. Look, there's a lot to try and figure out here. And I don't have an answer. I just think that it's really interesting. It's a really interesting baseball discussion of what is a player supposed to be, and is it okay for that player to go up there? And I heard, I was listening to Locked On Sox. I heard Yasmani talk about, yeah, this is kind of my approach now. This is kind of what I'm doing. I'm not going out here chasing pitches that I can't drive. If they're going to stay away from me instead of chasing, I'm going to let them walk me. Philosophically, how can any of us have a problem with that? But I want to give you another side of this argument. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to let you hear from Steve Stone. And I think that Stoney's argument has some validity to it. I'll explain next here on The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.